She's a dream, though.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Pelican Debrief Podcast. I am your host, Brendan Kleen, filling in for Nathan Heck for the foreseeable future. I am joined today by senior NBA editor at fansided.com, Ian Levy, and he's here to start off a little mini-series I thought of with this podcast that sort of might, be a little different, provide some different coverage of the opponents the Pelicans will be facing this year, focusing on their younger rivals in the league. And the first guy, the first team that I thought of for a variety of different reasons was the Indiana Pacers. And Ian is a fan and, you know, covers the league as a whole, so I felt like he'd be the best guy to bring on. Ian, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thank you for having me on.
Of course. So the first idea that I had was just to cover the off-season reviews that you did at FanSided. The Pelicans review sort of focused on how the team, and it's something that I mean, you can't really help but notice it on an individual player basis, but also in the way that they focus their off-season this year as far as completely trading offense for defense. They have to make those decisions. Gentry has to make those decisions in game, or he has had to in the past, to sort of swap out the players. And now they did it on a roster level with, you know, subtracting Ryan Anderson and Eric Gordon and adding a whole plethora of guys who figure to help out on defense. I guess just your overall, what you saw from more of an outsider's perspective with what this team did over the summer.
Yeah, I thought that trade-off was pretty striking. There was sort of such a clear line. You know, they let Gordon and Anderson go, guys, you know, who have sort of struggled to stay healthy for them, but have also, I think, been a part of the problem defensively, and one of the reasons that they sort of haven't been able to really really hold things together on the defensive end. So in looking at that trade-off statistically, I used box plus minus, which is a box score derived estimate of a player's net impact per 100 possessions. And Gordon and Anderson last year were both very good offensive players and absolutely terrible defensively. And you know, box plus minus is not a perfect measure. It misses some things. But it rated both Gordon and Anderson as net negatives last year. So as good as they were offensively, their defense was even worse and sort of cost the Pelicans overall. And then the four main guys that they brought in, I looked at, were Langston Galloway, Solomon Hill, Terrence Jones, and Etuan Moore. And for Jones, I used a two-year average because he, you know, did not play much last year and was injured. And Galloway, Jones, and Hill were all above average defenders as rated by box plus minus. Etuan Moore was slightly below. And all four of those guys were rated as offensive negative by box plus minus. So it was sort of this really sort of stark dichotomy. Like, we're going to get rid of our, you know, all offense, no defense guys, and we're willing to, you know, we're willing to take some guys who maybe are not huge offensive contributors as long as, you know, they can scrap and defend their positions and, you know, contribute on that end.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't get more stark as far as what those guys bring to the table than Eric Gordon and Ryan Anderson. And now they're both on the same team, which is a little ridiculous, but they kind of brought those problems to the Rockets too. The obvious takeaway there is that they're going to have to rely on Anthony Davis just a whole hell of a lot to make all of it work. Cause he's the only, you know, especially with Drew Holiday out for the beginning of the season, the only, you know, obvious contributor on offense, that you're going to be able to trust right away. You know, Buddy Hield might become that, but he's not going to be that right away. And that's sort of, honestly, that the pace in the offense of the Pelicans as a whole sort of brings me to the first comparison to the Pacers, and it's what you touched on in your off-season review of the team for FanSided, which is just how much that they're going to look to, like, to what extent they're going to really try to push the pace of the team. You kind of looked at what Vogel did with the team for the, you know, time he was there, sort of, you know, that created this core, and then what McMillan has done in his various stops, and kind of showed that they might not actually have a a real case to be made for making that coaching switch purely on the basis of pushing the pace. What did you see there?
Yeah, I think the interesting thing for me with the Pacers is the sort of the disconnect between what the team they say they want to be and then how that's sort of reflected in the moves that they make. So, you know, 2 years ago or a year and a half ago or whatever it was, before last season, Bird said, you know, we want to play up-tempo, we want to score more points, we want to be more sort of effective and versatile on offense. And maybe some of that was myself and other people maybe reading into his comments a little bit, because he didn't explicitly say, you know, we sort of want to play pace and space and we want to sort of run a spread pick and roll attack. But that sort of idea sort of seemed to go hand in hand. And so they didn't have, they didn't make dramatic personnel changes last year. But I thought Vogel did a nice job sort of making do, making some stylistic changes with, you know, essentially the same roster. And then going into this year, it seemed like they let Vogel go. They added Nate McMillan, who had been an assistant there by all accounts, done a really good job, had been very effective in two previous head coaching stints with the Sonics and the Trailblazers. But his teams were characterized by very efficient offense is sort of meticulous. And so there's not a lot of track record for him as a kind of up-tempo, push-the-pace coach. You know, that remains to be seen. You know, it's been almost a decade since his time with the Blazers. So, you know, maybe he's learned some new tricks, and maybe that style of play with those teams was sort of him making the most of what he had as opposed to sort of his natural inclination. But if they were just sort of looking for a coach with experience for that style, it seems like he's not the guy. And then when you look at their offseason, they added you know, the George Hill for Jeff Teague swap to me feels like an offensive-defensive thing. Teague has a little more offensive skill. He's a little more of a defensive liability than Hill. I'm not sure what Teague offers on offense is really going to be that impactful this year, considering they also have Monte Ellis and Rodney Stuckey, two guys who don't really space the floor and are going to need the ball in their hands to be effective or, you know, contribute. And then adding Thad Young up front, who, you know, is a small ball four, you know, a pretty good defender, can sort of play in an up-tempo game, but is not an outside shooter, not going to offer much in terms of spacing. And so they sort of had this situation where it struck me like they're sort of set up to maybe play faster without a real plan for what that looks like and why. You know, when they get into the half court, it just seems like it's going to be tough and stagnant. There's not going to be a lot of space. Even starting Miles Turner, you know, he's got an 18-footer, but his range doesn't go out past the three-point line. Monte Ellis is not a three-point shooter either. So then you have, you know, your starting lineup has maybe two three-point shooters and Paul George and Jeff Teague, and one of them probably has the ball in his hands the majority of the time. So there's, you know, that's not much help in terms of spacing. So, yeah, I think I'm not sure how it all fits together. To me, sort of looking from the outside, it seems like they're probably a little worse defensively, maybe have a little more offensive talent, but I'm not sure it sort of lends itself to the team that they want to be. And so it wouldn't surprise me if they were, you know, about the same, you know, win-loss total as they were last year, maybe even slightly worse.
Yeah, the thing that stands out to me the most in hearing what you're saying, and also, you know, my thoughts, just the overlap is pretty... It's awkward, and then the Jefferson signing throws a complete curveball into all of it, and makes all of the fits a little less nice, considering that, you know, you only put somebody like him onto the court, and, you know, you're going to gain something by having him on the court, but that's, again, only going to be in a different role, but in the same way of all the guards that they have corralled, probably going to only happen if he's getting the ball pretty consistently. And so that kind of, you know, and he's not going to be a rim runner or a, you know, run the floor, finish on the fast break kind of player, especially as his age is, you know, getting pretty up there now. So yeah, and, you know, Teague and Ellis and Stuckey all kind of do the same thing. to, you know, with a different style. And I've heard rumors and, you know, mutterings that Ellis is going to they've asked him to shoot more three-pointers as if, you know, he can just convert those just because he takes more of them. That's not really the answer to any problem. He's been most effective throughout his entire career when he's running around another big guy that can shoot. And, you know, I'm thinking directly of the Mavericks, but just, you know, overall, a big, high-powered offensive attack is where he's going to be the best, and they don't really have the tools to make that happen. I guess we'll switch gears a little bit to I was just interested to hear your thoughts, more developed thoughts about Buddy Hield. You wrote a piece about him around the draft that I remembered reading, and I brought it up again to I'm not going to quiz you on it or anything, but just tell us what you think about Buddy Hield, because I know that's something that Pelicans fans are excited about, and he's pretty polarizing in his own way as far as, you know, what he actually can become, especially getting drafted so high. There's an expectation that he'll become something a lot quicker than I think a lot of people think he, you know, actually will.
Well, he's an interesting case because I don't know how I want to put this, but, like, I think he will be probably a disappointment in terms of overall net value for his pick slot. I think probably I think he probably sort of develops into kind of a one-dimensional shooter. You know, maybe he's able to contribute a little bit on the pick and roll. We'll see how that sort of turns out. I think defense will always sort of be a struggle for him. But I also see him as a guy who will put up big numbers, and so it may not be a problem for him. Like, I would guess that his overall impact this year is not great as a rookie, both sort of thinking about his defensive liabilities and the general idea that rookies are not good, even those who, you know, are going to turn into stars someday. But it wouldn't surprise me if he puts up, you know, 13, 14 points a game on a healthy three-point percentage. And I think some of those numbers, I don't want to call them empty, because I think they're meaningful to the Pelicans, and his ability to shoot threes and space the floor is going to be really important to them this year. But I think he will perhaps be protected from some criticism because his numbers may look better than sort of his overall impact, if that makes sense. And the interesting thing to me, that piece that you're referencing, was sort of about how he's viewed going into the draft, because, you know, Steph Curry's impact was so enormous last year. And Hield is, I think, sort of as close as you are going to get to NBA Curry from a college player in some sort of like really obvious ways, like a really good three-point shooter, really good high-volume three-point shooter, really good off-the-dribble three-point shooter, all those things that sort of make Steph exceptional, that ability to create his own three-point shot without having to rely on his teammates necessarily, that ability to sort of make bad three-point shots at a rate where it's still positive for the team. And obviously Hield has a lot of things that he can't do or doesn't do that Curry does. He's not the penetrator that Curry is. He's not the, you know, the shot creator that Curry is in terms of, you know, creating shots for his teammates or creating things off the dribble. And probably not even as good a defender as Curry maybe was coming into the league. But I just thought it was really interesting. Like, if he ended up as maybe a top four pick, I was thinking of that as a representation of how willing teams are to sort of talk themselves into, if we want to compete with the Warriors, we have to find our own Stephen Curry. And if you're, you know, if that's a mission that a franchise decides that they need to embark on, that they need to find their own Steph Curry, Hield is probably as close as they're going to get. And so, or at least as close as you're going to get in terms of something you can talk yourself into. And so I think where he went is probably more reflective of his draft slot. And so I guess that maybe speaks well to the scouting the capabilities and the rationale of the teams ahead of him. But yeah, I was thinking, you know, maybe he jumps up to the number three spot or something like that, especially if the Celtics made a trade. And yeah, then maybe we see that as somebody like chasing the next Curry.
Well, I mean, yeah, it's funny because I'm glad that the Pelicans get to be that science experiment of a team, but I think you really should be finding yourself the next, like, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope or Karl Towns who can actually defend the guy instead of just, we'll match his scoring output because it's generational talent and the Pelicans are dumb if they think that's what's going to happen. But, I get what you're saying. Not that they necessarily do, and the fact that he slid a little compared to what he could have gone if you were just going based on that sort of reputational scouting, I guess, as well. But I still think six was high. Not that they really had a whole lot to choose from based on what they needed, but just overall six is, I think, a little high from what I expect him to become. But another offseason addition of the Pelicans, who I think we should talk about, is Solomon Hill. Obviously, he was a Pacer for the first 4 years of his career. Now he's a Pelican. Didn't really do a ton to earn the contract that he got until the end of last season into the playoffs. What did you see from him, and how shocked were you that he got $12 million a year?
I was a little shocked. Yeah, I think a lot of people attribute Hill's contract to his play during the playoffs, and he, you know, hit some threes down the stretch, and people sort of think of that as his coming out. But 2 years ago, when Paul George was out for the whole season, Hill started, I want to say, something like 78 games or something like that for the Pacers. He was in their starting lineup, and he played well. He was he played mostly on the wing. He played on tough defense. He moved the ball on offense. Couldn't hit a shot. Not a great finisher. What he offered on offense was you know, filling the break and filling the lane in transition and crashing the offensive glass a little bit. You know, cutting and movement. But I think he looked like much more of a contributor 2 years ago than he sort of did last year. You know, as with Paul George back and. You know, he kind of fell out of the rotation. I think he's a good defender. I think probably his value is overblown. One of the reasons that he looked good last year was the Pacers played him a lot at small ball four. I don't know necessarily how viable that is long term. I mean, he's still kind of like 6'5", maybe 6'6". I'm not a believer in his shooting. I think some of that's a mirage. And even if his percentage ticks up, he has a really slow release and a really low release as well. When you talk about three-point shooting, there's sort of two ideas. There's like the actual them making three-point baskets and the benefit of those points, you know, versus the attempt for the offense. And then there's also sort of the implied effect of spacing. And if somebody has a certain three-point percentage or, you know, a certain reputation as a shooter, you know, how teams play them and how that creates space for other players. So even I think if his three-point percentage ticks up a couple points, it may not be as beneficial to the Pelicans because of that slow release and of that low release. And I think teams are not going to play him. You know, if he's shooting 35% on threes, I still don't think teams will, you know, sort of play him as a 35% three-point shooter, if that makes sense. I think his shooting is not going to create much space in the Pelicans offense. And, it's sort of hard to say because they've never really been able to assemble their sort of full complement of players around Anthony Davis, but still in a vacuum, it seems like the ideal offensive situation, at least around Anthony Davis is a spread pick and roll attack. And, you know, if Holiday's healthy, him and Davis make a nice pair. You put Buddy Hield on the wing. That's great. And then, you know, those other two guys, I'm not sure if Solomon Hill should really be one of those other two guys, you know, out on the floor to make that work.
Yeah. I think you're right that the role he'll probably play, at the beginning of this season, as the team sort of figures out what it has, is more along the lines of that 2 years ago, being more of a distributor, like just a super role player kind of guy where he's going to do a little bit of everything. I mean, we heard on Media Day that he was basically promised a starting spot, which, yeah, you're going to pay somebody $12 million. They'll probably be starting. But that likely means that small forward, since the assumption is that Omer Asik will be starting also. And yeah, he doesn't provide quite the same value, and he's not going to be asked to do the same things if he's playing small forward. So it's yeah, and then the idea that he earned the contract in the playoffs would lead you to believe he will be playing the four, because, you know, that was the value he added for the Pacers in the playoffs. But it sort of remains to be seen, for me at least, what exactly they think he'll be adding. You know what I mean? I think Dante Cunningham as a player that maybe not a lot of the people around the watching basketball know about, but he does a lot of those things. Not necessarily the passing and ball handling capabilities, but they bought a bunch of that over the offseason as well. So it's like, if you're going to be, you know, putting Cunningham on the shelf and replacing him with Hill, you'd like him to be demonstrably better at, you know, at least one or two things. And I don't necessarily see that he is. Cunningham has improved in shooting the past 2 years, especially from the corners. And unless Hill's doing that and adding the playmaking and all that, I don't necessarily agree with that decision, especially on a four-year contract. I think they did a good job of, I mean, each one more got 4 years from them as well, but Langston Galloway and Terrence Jones both were on shorter deals, which I sort of liked, and just seeing what they have and then figuring it out from there. But they bought into Solomon Hill for better or worse, and I wrote in the offseason that he's not as young as, you know, most guys coming off their rookie contract would be, because he was in college for a little longer. So he's sort of becoming what he's going to be already, and we don't really, you know what those skills he's going to bring are. So I think I'm on the same page.
That's another important point too, because again, like, there's sort of this perception that he came out of nowhere last year, or he sort of broke out last year, or people are thinking about just sort of that small minute sample and saying, you know, well, oh, if he gets regular playing time, you know, he's going to develop. But he, you know, he was a full-time starter for a full year for the Pacers and did not develop much offensively over the course of that year. At least his jump shot and playmaking didn't come along much in that year. So, yeah, I think he's probably closer to what he is or what he's going to be than, you know, some sort of hypothetical ceiling.
Yeah, I think, and you're right. You're the point you made about him being, he's not Draymond Green. He's not a deceptively tall and big guy that's going to be able to slide up a position easily. So he's going to have, he's not a good rebounder. At least he's not shown himself to be a guy who you can trust to, and considering that Davis has always relied on others to create those opportunities for him as well, I'm not sure Hill's going to be that guy. But, I guess the conversation about Davis as a whole sort of, plays itself into the Pacers big man, young big man, Miles Turner, another guy that maybe most NBA fans don't know a whole lot about. I guess he had a pretty good showing in the playoffs, but that was on the NBA TV special series. So I guess just your thoughts on him, and then we can try to compare the two guys as much as we can.
I'm really excited about Turner. I was not wild about the Pacers picking him. I don't pay as much attention to the draft as I probably should. So I hadn't seen him a ton and was relying a lot on, you know, other people's scouting reports and stuff. And what I read did not make him sound mobile. It sounded like, you know, to read those Draft Express scouting reports from 2 years ago or 2 summers ago, it made him sound like Roy Hibbert with a jump shot. You know, everything was, he's got range on his jump shot and he's going to be a rim protector, and he's got these questions about his mobility. And so the surprise was that he's a lot more agile and mobile, more quick than I thought. He's still not sort of an end-to-end, not a fast guy end-to-end. He's not running the floor in transition. But in the half court, he's a lot quicker and a lot more agile in space than I was expecting. And you saw that sort of right away in Summer League, you know, 2 years ago in Summer League. So yeah, for people who haven't seen him, I think he's going to be a really good big man. He's not quite that Porzingis, Jokic, Towns tier, but he's a good shot blocker. He has good instincts around the basket. He's a good rebounder. You know, he's maybe a little bit bigger, or maybe got a little more heft to him than Towns or Jokic. And he's got a nice jump shot. He either took no three-pointers last year or, you know, like, count them on one hand.
Yeah, he averaged 0.2 per game. So, yeah, they're, like, 8 or something.
So I think, right now his range maybe tops out at, like, 18, 19 feet. But he's really good from there. I think he shot maybe 40, 45% on mid-range jumpers last year. And he was really consistent as, a pick-and-pop guy. And so I think the thought is that, in a year or two, he's maybe a consistent three-point threat, which would really, really help their offense. Whether that happens this year, I'm a little bit skeptical. So he's got some work to do offensively in the pick and roll. He was really he had a really clear preference for popping on the pick and roll last year. I mean, he sort of much more reluctant to dive to the basket. The elbow, catching at the elbow was really his comfort zone. And he was really quick to launch jumpers from there. So this year would be nice to see him a little more active rolling to the basket, making those passes to the guy in the corner on the short roll. Or, even catching the ball at 18 feet and on a pick and pop, making a pump fake, getting his guy in the air, and then making something happen sort of in between off of that. Because I think people are really going to play him a little more aggressively this year for that jump shot. And he's got a nice post game, too. It's a little bit simple. And he's got to have some sort of counter moves worked in there. But I think eventually, he's got a nice post game to come along. And then defensively, he's a good shot blocker. He's got good instincts, but he's also a second-year big man, and he's got a lot to learn. So I think that's one of the things for the Pacers this year is their defense will take a step back, swapping Turner into the starting lineup for Jan Mahinmi, who's now with the Wizards. Not so much because Turner is a significantly worse player than Mahinmi. He doesn't have the experience. Mahinmi was a really good, sort of free safety and sort of holding the defense together last year, and so I think I'll drop off with Mahinmi. But I don't know if I had to sort of draw a very optimistic and rosy comparison, I'd say maybe he's like a LaMarcus Aldridge a couple of years down the road. That's similar sort of physical size, maybe a little bit better defensively, hopefully on his ceiling, but that's kind of his offensive game right now. And it seems like that's where it'd be heading. Post-ups, mid-range jumpers, maybe stretch that range a little bit more.
Yeah. What impressed me, cause I don't know, I felt like around the league reading and hearing things, I wasn't watching too much Pacers last year, but, was just this guy that's going to, be a traditional stretch five. I think that he got painted in that way a little too much, and he's not really that guy. Maybe in 5 years he'll be lighting it up from behind them, but I don't really think that's what his game should be, because another thing that was impressive to me is his size. I mean, as somebody who watches Anthony Davis and has followed his career, that's been the battle for him for his entire career, and into this season he comes into training camp proclaiming a weight gain and a muscle gain, which is probably not even true, but the idea that Turner's pretty much ready in that department. Obviously, you're gonna slim down and add some muscle just by becoming an NBA player compared to a freshman at Texas. But just as far as frame goes, he's ready to bang with those guys, and his defense is pretty. It's fun to watch in the same way that Davis's was early in his career. He has a knack for those weak side blocks that Davis made a little career of at Kentucky. But I think it's nitpicking. But he does a lot of rotating on defense, like his feet, like he'll turn his body instead of shuffling. Which is, that's just a rookie playing defense, but
he's really overly aggressive. Like he definitely tries to block everything.
He runs toward the ball handler, and then he just has to watch as he runs right past him. Yeah. And obviously that stuff will come. But it's enviable considering that Davis is still working on it 5 years later. But I guess just since he's the biggest name and the most important thing about the Pelicans, obviously, this is sort of not a make-or-break season for Anthony Davis, considering he just signed a five-year extension with the team. But just as far as if this is going to work, if these defensive additions are going to work, he'll have to become that guy. On offense, he'll have to round out the game. And on defense, I think we sort of shortchange what he'll have to do to make all of the other stuff they didn't add big defense. You know, they didn't add big guys to protect the rim or anything like that. It's going to be him, just like it's had to be in years past. But considering that they really have the tools to become a better defensive team, it's really going to rely a lot on that development from him. So, again, just your general thoughts on where he's at and what you think has to be done to make it, to get it where it needs to be, whether some, you know, scouting thing or just a big picture idea of seeing the team play and struggle on that end for so long.
I mean, it's hard because he's always, you know, the lineups and the rotations are always different because he's had so, you know, they've had so many injuries. That
you don't think Ryan Anderson maximizes his defensive potential?
Yeah, I mean, there's a bunch of issues. Like he, you know, hasn't played with great defensive players. You know, playing next to Anderson, playing with Eric Gordon, you know, that's Tyreke Evans. Clearly, like that's been an issue. But also, like that, it's just guys in and out of the lineup all the time. I mean, there has just not been much consistency. It would be interesting to look at like the. And the spans, like the longest number of, if you look at five man units, like the longest uninterrupted stretches that he's been able to play with like the same five man unit, you know, without somebody being hurt or you know somebody getting swapped in or out. So I think that's clearly a thing. I mean, he has to do different things when he plays with Ryan Anderson than he does with you know some of their other bigs, and it's just always in and out and changing. So. I think having better and more aggressive perimeter defenders will help this year. I think it would be much more important if they're healthy. Like, I think, you know, if Solomon Hill and Langston Galloway and Etuan Moore can all play 78 games this year, that will be much more important than, you know, the defensive upgrade between them and Eric Gordon or them and Drew Holiday or them and Tyreke Evans or whatever it is. I think that consistency is really important. It will let him sort of settle into a role that, you know, has maybe felt like it's always changing under him. But I think they also need him to be much more, they need him to be much more active and maybe active is not the right word, but they need him to lead the defense. They need him to sort of take control of the defense, to be assertive and to make stopping the opponent on each possession his responsibility. You know, he should see these other four guys as his, I don't know how this works from a chemistry standpoint, but he should see these other guys as like his assistants or, you know, like his, you know, his helpers. It's his job to keep the other team from scoring, and it's his job to make sure that Solomon Hill is where he's supposed to be and Langston Galloway is where he's supposed to be, but it's, you know, it's ultimately Davis's responsibility. And, you know, that's a thing that I'm not totally sure how much it's a real effect or how much it's a mirage, but I think you often see young players who either come in with a defensive reputation or have you know, sort of make their mark early with defense. And once they get a little taste of that stardom and get a little sort of freedom on offense, the defense wanes. I don't think, you know, Paul George has held up pretty well, but he also, you know, he's still a great two-way player, but he also clearly does not exert as much effort on defense as he did, you know, his first 3 years in the league when he was not an offensive star. He was not carrying the load for that team.
Well, it almost makes you wonder if throwing Davis into the fire like they're going to have to do this season and have him shoulder more of a load on both ends is sort of, I mean, it's along the lines of what George had to do. Obviously, he had older veterans on the team with him when they're, you know, in their Eastern Conference Finals runs of a couple years ago. But the past couple years since, he's really been the guy and face the same sort of changes that Davis has as far as losing the talent and sort of being forced to. And we've heard a lot from Media Day and quotes around the preseason and whatever that he's been like almost specifically asked to take on a bigger role as far as, you know, leadership in air quotes, whatever that means. But I think it can have a tangible effect on the defense specifically. That's where I've been going with it. All of, you know, September and October, as we've heard more, is that has to be the place where it manifests itself for anything to go well. I mean, I think of him and I'm the most optimistic way as a KG type of player, and that's the, I mean, that obviously is a 20 years away from becoming true, but that's the missing link, is that, you know, you watch a player like Kevin Garnett, who impacts the game on defense the way that he did, and so much of it is a result of owning, like you're saying, making that stop just his entire responsibility, like owning it to the, you know, the fullest extent. So, and we haven't seen anything like that from Davis, whether the defense has gone, you know, well or poorly during any given season. So,
it might be sort of like pop psychology, but there's, I think there's guys who have this mindset, like, I'm going to try and stop you, but if I don't, that's all right, because I'll score on you on the other end. You know, like, not to, you know, sort of put myself in James Harden's head, but I sort of imagine that dialogue. Like,
I've been thinking about James Harden the whole time you've been, for about 10 minutes now, so I'm glad you said it.
Yeah, like, I'd like to stop you. I will try, but if it doesn't, like, that somewhere in there, there's this idea that not getting stops doesn't necessarily mean we won't win. That because I can get it back at the other end, you know, we only need a few stops because our offense is so good and I'm so good on offense. And I think it seems like Davis has blossomed so much offensively that there may be some of that sort of lurking out there, you know, like, well, we didn't get him this time, but I'm going to go down and score on the other end, and that'll sort of balance it out. And yeah, I think he needs to take defense personally at sort of a different level. And, you know, he doesn't have to be Kevin Garnett. He doesn't have to be, you know, headbutting the basket support and stuff like that, but, you know, blocking every shot that comes after the whistle. But it does seem like he's, for all his defensive talent, it does seem like he's just a piece of the machine. And I think he needs to think of himself as the machine. Like, he is what makes their offense work. And I think he needs to think of himself as what makes their defense work too. And again, I'm just projecting. I have no idea what he actually thinks about.
No, but I think it's, I mean, he's a player that...
That's how it reflects when I watch. You know, it seems like, yeah, I'm one of the guys on defense, and he needs to be the guy.
Yeah, he's a player where he wears his heart on his sleeve to an extent, and he's definitely a guy that you can tell how the game's going and how he's feeling just by sort of paying attention to how he's acting on the court. So I definitely don't think that's too far-fetched. Obviously, we can't know. But, yeah, I think that is, I mean, we got a lot into everything that I wanted to cover. I guess just for fun's sake, we might as well go for season projection, just record. We don't need to do standings and playoff seedings or anything, but just compared to how they did last year. Obviously, the Pelicans season was pretty much a disaster, and then the Pacers would probably figure to be taking a little bit of a step back this year, considering that they didn't do a whole ton to improve and lost some, you know, Jan Mahimi, whose development was a pretty big key to what they were able to do last year, and replacing him with a young player like that. So, just take it away.
I think the Pacers, like I said, are probably about the same place. I think they finish mid-40s, 45, 46 wins. Feels about right to me. I think the Western Conference, I think that as top-heavy as it still feels with the Warriors, I don't think they're chasing 73 again this year, so I think they're probably in the mid-60s. I think San Antonio not only is not as good as they were last year, I think also they don't have any illusions about stealing a number one seed from Golden State, and so I don't think they have to push for that at all. So I think they're maybe not even a 60-win team this year. And Oklahoma City, I think, you know, probably drops out, down to 50 or slightly below. So I think there's a lot of extra wins to be had in the Western Conference just from those three at the top. So I would imagine New Orleans as you know, could pick up 6, 7, 8 wins, something like that, finish in the high 30s. But I think they're probably not going to finish above 500, and I'd be pretty surprised if they made the playoffs. I think there's a few teams, in that chase for the last playoff spot. I think there's probably a few teams ahead of them. you know. But hopefully, I think there's plenty of ways for them to miss the playoffs and still have it feel like a successful season. I think they're at a talent deficit against some of those other teams. But if the defense is a lot better, if Davis is healthy, if some of the new parts sort of feel right, if Hield is knocking down three-pointers and sort of giving reasons for optimism, I think just sort of feeling like the momentum's going back in the other direction, I think that it could feel like a success even if they're, if they're not in the playoffs.
Well, I agree, but I don't think that that's what the fans wanted to hear. But no, I think you're right. And I think that
sorry, fans.
I think seeing a competitive season and improvement from the guys that we spent money and draft capital on will be more impressive and exciting than getting swept by the Warriors again or something. We're not gonna crack the real contender level anywhere near this season, so there's no reason to try that hard to crack in. Well, thank you. That was it. I think the Turner AD stuff is a lot more interesting than I wish that they could play each other more, because I think that it's more fun to watch them. I think Towns and Davis are a little bit different as far as their styles and whatever, but Turner and Davis, the comparisons are easy, and the fact that they're sort of their franchise's relative upward momentum is hinging on them a little bit. I thought it'd be a little interesting to talk about. So I appreciate you coming on, and for Pelican Debrief podcast listeners, we'll be back trying to do one or two a week until the season, talk to some more fans and coverers of young teams. So I hope you'll continue to tune in. Always wondering if she's all into me. Curly hair like a fantasy, I can't believe. She's quiet, but the only ass to intrigue. And she's the kind of girl that you're bringing home. That booty looking so nice, like provolone.